Welcome to Board Game Binge, the place where we bring you bite-sized, bingeable board game content across the industry. I'm your host, James Staley, and in this episode, we're chatting with David Bach, lead designer at Binks at Dinks Games. David's newest game, Rocket Ranchers, is a grid-drafting set collection card game featuring space cats, and it's currently on Kickstarter. David, welcome to the binge. How you doing, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it is awesome having you. I appreciate you agreeing to come on the podcast. Anytime I see space cats, man, I am in.
Yeah, it's become really popular lately. I noticed it in a couple of games recently, you know, Nemesis, and then I think the one from Reiner Knizia recently. So yeah. I feel like I'm in good company.
I'm just waiting for that like Saturday Night Live Laser Cats game to come
out.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh my God. So Binks at Dinks Games is, I think, is a rather new company that you've started. Let's kind of roll back the clock. I'm interested to learn kind of like, how did you get into this industry? Have you been gaming your whole life, or kind of where'd this all start?
Yeah. So I started gaming when I was young, but very different genre. When I was a kid, my dad was very much into historical tabletop wargaming. So I started with like French Indian Wars, Napoleonics, and that led into like BattleTech, like classic BattleTech with like the metal figs before the Mech Warrior HeroClix things that came out. And I put on my first game at Little Wars. I think when I was like 12 or something like that, we made like this huge set and came up with mechanics where you had to push like a train car, and I sort of fell in love with games there, and that sort of like transitioned into me loving video games, and I sort of stepped away from board games. And then about 8 years ago, I decided I wanted to get back into playing board games, and I found a local game night, and when I say local, it's a 45 minute drive. And a couple years later, I became the host of the game night, and now I've been going almost once a week for like 8 years, 50 minute drive every Tuesday. So
that's amazing. Yeah. My local game night as well is like 40, 45 minute drive to get there. But you know, once you get that kind of group that you just click with,
100%,
you know, it's like coming home. Right. And
yeah.
I remember this past year I went to Essen, and so I had a couple other trips before that. So I was out of gaming for a good month, and I remember coming back to the game night, and I literally said that to someone. I said, this feels like I'm coming home. Like, it's just, you know, it's that comfort food, right? Just being surrounded by your friends. And
absolutely. Yeah. My game night's very patient with me, me throwing my stuff at them and asking them to play test things. So
they play test friendly? Your group?
They do for me from time to time. Time to time when I ask nicely, but it's not one where it's not like a Protospiel, like mini Protospiel, like one of those game nights. Mostly it's one of those constantly playing new games and rarely repeating ones. But it's a really great group and we love it. It's near and dear to my heart. So they're good
as
people.
A game designer, there is no better way to, for lack of a better word, research your trade, right? Than to, like, because our game night's the same thing.
Yeah.
Every week I'm learning something new, and it's rare that you have the same game come out twice. Sometimes it does, but there's at least two new games for every one game that you know how to play. And that's a good thing because you're learning new mechanics. You're learning new story elements. You're kind of approaching things differently. And I find for me, it just kind of gets those creative juices flowing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I went to school for graphic design and creative writing. My wife went to school for the same thing. And I always go back to like, the creative writing classes. And I remember our teachers always saying, if you want to be a good writer, you have to read. And so I sort of take that into the board game, you know, industry as well. It's like, if you want to be a good game designer, you need to play a ton of games, you know, see what's out there, see what mechanics are there and, you know, what you can use, what you can change, you know, the more experience you have with it, the better you're going to be at it. And I think that that's helped me significantly. And the hundreds of board games behind me blurred out our testament to that.
Now, like, were you doing, like, are you doing this now full time, or is this kind of a side gig for you, or
yeah, that? So I originally started in the board game industry as like a pseudo Instagram reviewer, where I would, like, you know, post pictures of games that I was playing, and then I had, you know, a YouTube channel. I did some videos on there, and that was really fun. But that sort of led to me, I got my first job in the industry with Japanime Games as their marketing communication manager, then went to Arcane Wonders as their social media person. And then from there, I went freelance. And my wife and I started a company called The Game Box, which is a horrible pun based on our last name. And so from there, we basically were freelance creative tabletop support. So we were full-time photographers for 17 years. And so that was the first thing we started doing. But then also our graphic design backgrounds and our writing backgrounds. So we kind of, like, jack of all trades. So companies can come to us. We do a bunch of stuff for them. So we've worked with Cephalofare and Red Raven, Grandpa Beck's, Ravensburger, and but, you know, Incredible Dream Studios, and a bunch of others, which actually is my wife. She's full-time story editor now with Incredible Dream. Oh, wow. That did Kinfire Chronicles. And then now I've done all of these projects for other people, and I love them all. They're amazing. But I want to make my own thing now. So Binks and Inks, we started about a year ago. We announced it. But the name for Binks and Inks came about 6 years ago, when we were at the Brookfield Zoo with my son, and for his second birthday, and he got this toy dinosaur. And I said, "What do you want to name it?" And he goes, "Binks and Inks." And it was the first time he ever named anything like original name that wasn't like dog is doggy or cat is kitty. Like, this was Binks and Inks. It was this cool name. And I was like, all right, if I ever make a board game company someday, I'm going to call it Binks and Inks. And here we are. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's so, it's unique too. I'm sure getting that URL was not difficult.
Yeah, no, it wasn't difficult at all. But there's a whole bunch of people with cats and Binks because of Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
So the Binks name is not uncommon with cats, but yeah, it was pretty easy to get that that handle everywhere. So.
And working with some of these other companies, did you get a chance to work on their Kickstarter pages as well? Or
yeah, so I helped out a little bit in Kickstarters with Japanime early on. And then most of my work was on the other side of the Kickstarter. So helping things get ready for print, you know, getting things ready for publication. And so I had a lot less experience behind the scenes on the Kickstarter itself, but thankfully I've always felt that surrounding myself with people who know way more than I do is the best way to be able to know what you're doing. Yeah. So that's what I did. I went to a lot of people, asked a ton of questions, learned and sponged as much as I possibly could before launching this thing. And I think it turned out pretty awesome. So I'm very pleased.
Well, certainly I think kind of the production side, which a lot of people have a lot of difficulty with, you know, coming in with that skill set is quite handy. Being able to do your own artwork too, your own graphic design. Those are two areas where they can get very costly, right? When you're having to outsource to other people, those costs can rise. So being able to do all that internally, although I'm sure you've got a lot of work now on your plate, right? Your efficiency is way higher than probably the average person in terms of just being able to crank that content out, right?
Yeah. I mean, being able to do, you know, obviously our illustrator is Cam Kendall, and, you know, that efficiency is a big deal. Like, I remember my mom saying, "David, you know, you went to art school, you are an artist, you're very talented at drawing." And I'm like, yes. And I could do, you know, something similar to what Cam Kendall, our illustrator, does, but it would take me 3 years. And, you know, Cam can, like, pull this out, you know, a couple of days, you know, so it's like, I don't want to be sitting there trying to draw for like 3 years and finally have this game done and bring it out. I want to go and be efficient and have someone who knows what they're doing, who can do it quickly and professionally, and especially be able to do it fast if there's any changes that need to be made. And Cam was amazing to work with, but doing the graphic design myself was a really fun part of the project as well. But we've got pretty much 95% of the game done. All that we've got left is the rule book and the infamous back of the box. So yeah, thankfully I don't have to really show those in the videos. So
now, in terms of the genre of games that you're launched with, what was the decision to launch kind of like, I don't want to say the word simple, but like a lower time investment type of, like a gateway game, right? Is what you've kind of launched here, you know, a la Point Salad, you know, Cat Lady, these kind of genre of games. The decision to do that versus maybe your background, which obviously seems to be an RPG, what led you to kind of make this your first stand?
Oh, that's a really good question. So first and foremost, it came down to experience and necessity. I didn't like, don't get me wrong. Like I've play tested for Vita Lacerda and we've got all of the Eagle Griffin Vita Lacerda games. We love big, heavy games. My son is 8 and he's played Weather Machines. So like we're very much a heavy gamer family. But for me, like one of my big things is I really love seeing new gamers play games and learn new mechanics and fall in love with them. So part of that was I wanted to create something more casual, more gateway that, you know, you could, you know, play at your game night and have fun, but also bring to like your family reunion and play with your non-gamer family. That's sort of like the wheelhouse that I wanted to sort of aim for. One, it's a bigger audience, to be blunt. And two, it's a lot less complicated in terms of a first Kickstarter. I didn't want to make, with my experience level, I didn't want to make this big sprawling product with lots of moving parts with potential things that could be a problem in terms of production. However, making a much simpler game, as you probably know, simple can sometimes be more difficult than complicated games in terms of making sure it's working perfectly. Yeah. So for me, it was, I wanted to make something that was inexpensive, that was easy to produce, easy to play test, make sure that we could put out a really good product as our first game and be able to build a bigger audience at that lower price point to, you know, get more people looking at our stuff. I think that was a big part of it. Like I've got ideas for big, heavy games, but I want to wait and make sure that we know what we're doing with like a small $20 card game before we go into something big and massive when it's mostly, most of the time, just me.
Yeah. Well, it's lower risk, right?
And yeah, absolutely.
We very much did the same thing in our approach. I think we're up to now, we have 10 games in total, but you know, in Kickstarters,
congratulations,
you know, Kickstarters, and started very much that way, you know, very, very small, simple games, simple campaigns, and use that as learning, right? And everyone we did, we would learn till we built up the Cities of Venus, which is our largest campaign, much more complicated game, way more breadth in terms of how that campaign spread out. But I wouldn't have been ready to do that out of the gate. And there's a good chance I probably wouldn't have nailed it as well as we did had we not had those other campaigns first to kind of cut our teeth and kind of learn from experience. Because you can still get as much advice as possible from the people around you, but there's nothing like actually going through it to be kind of that main teacher, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's trial by fire. And as little fire as possible would be best.
So how long had you been working on this game? Like this Rocket Ranchers, is this something that has been in kind of in development for a while, or did this come together quickly? Or
yeah, this is the funny thing is our second game that we're putting out, which is Silk and Venom, we actually started before this game, but we felt that this one was a more marketable product. It has space cats that definitely is going to draw people more in than spiders. So we decided that one would be our first game. But we started designing it. I actually went for fun the other day and I went and looked in our files, and like the first concept art file that I made was back in August of 2021. And so I had made like sort of like a pseudo version of the game with like phase 10 cards, which was my go-to like playtest cards to try out mechanics. And we started with that one, and originally the game was going to be literally a ranching game about on a ranch, and you would have a dog that's going out and like herding the animals and bringing them back in, which is why the dog ship is still the card that you use to collect your stuff. And we still have the shepherd action to be able to move animals around. But my son is a huge fan of Slime Rancher. And he said, "Daddy, can you make it be, you know, a ranch in space?" And I'm like, "All right, sure. Of course." So like we totally leaned into the, like the Slime Rancher, Cowboy Bebop, Trigun, you know, space Western sort of vibe. And it just all clicked into place from there, and actually worked better for the theme too. When you're teleporting animals, it made more sense. So, and then the space cats came in and it was done. So.
Yeah. As soon as the layer, that's the icing, right? As soon as the layer of the space cats in, then it's, that's the final finesse. Your campaign right now on Kickstarter has done quite well. You've already funded. I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
I'm going to put this in Canadian dollars just because it's the only way I can see it, quite frankly. You're at 25,000 on a goal of 5,000. So you got 5X of your goal. Yeah. So that's awesome, especially for your first campaign. Way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, the artwork is just awesome and it's adorable. And
Cam did an amazing job.
These cats flying in from everywhere, attacking the ship. It's quite cute and people love cats. I'm sure are going to absolutely adore this game. Can you walk us through kind of the guts of how you play this game?
Absolutely. So my favorite thing was I was watching Dice Tower did a little video the other day and they were saying, oh, I think this is going to be on Take That game. Oh, it isn't. So I was like, no, it's not Take That. There's no Take That in it at all. Basically, the concept is you are part of a colony on planet Binxidinks, named after our company. And you have been hired by Moros Heavy Industries, this company, to go out, collect animals, and bring them back to your ranch. But they accidentally woken up all of these space cats that were in hibernation. And they want you to kind of collect them because it's a liability for them. And if you collect enough, they'll pay you back for all of the damage that they cause. So the basic concept of the game, you're going to start with a 4x4 grid of cards, and you're going to use your dog ship cards, which are your hand of cards. They have polyominal shapes on them. Mm-hmm. And when you play those cards, you're going to play them immediately into your discard pile, which I'll get back to in a second on that. And you're going to collect the shape that you just played. So there could be a line of four, a line of two, a square, or a single. And those are the animals you're going to collect. And unfortunately, you have to collect everything because it's tractor beam. You can't choose what the tractor beam picks up. Now, if any space cats are adjacent to the animals that you're beaming up, you also have to take the space cats. And they can be both good points or bad points, depending on how many you collect at the end of the game. When you bring those animals home to your ranch, you're going to put them into a corral. So corral is going to be a face down card and everybody starts with one. The cards that you bring in, all have the animals often have to go in the same like species corrals as well. So if you don't have a place to put that animal, you can sell it to the company playing it face down. That gives you a new corral to be able to work with. But unfortunately, corrals are expensive. So if you have any empty corrals at the end of the game, you're going to lose a bunch of points. So you don't want to make too many if you can't fill them up. If you want to, the thing that I enjoy about the game is that once you play a card from your hand, from your dog ship, you can't get it back until you reboot your ship. So if you play all four of your tractor beam cards, it reboots automatically. Or if let's say the wilderness doesn't look like what you want, you can skip your turn by rebooting if you've played at least two cards. Mm. You also have a shepherd card, which allows you to swap two animals of the same species, kind of get things more with when where you want them. But once you play it again, you have to reboot your ship to get them back. Then at the end of the game, you're going to score points based on how many of each species you have. So the more of each species, it grows exponentially. So if you have 3 to 4 of an animal, you only get 1 point each. But if you have 8 or more of an animal, you might get 3 points each. And that's the basic rules of the game. If you're playing with the advanced rules, which we put in there for gamers like you and me, or people who are going to their game night, you can shuffle the deck and choose 3 random animals that will score differently than all of the other animals. So sometimes you might get score points for sets. Sometimes you might score points for variety, similar in style to like Sushi Go or something like that.
Yeah.
And if you want to be crazy and do what my son made sure that we could be able to do, you can play with all of the special scoring at once. which like I don't recommend until you've learned all of the special scoring, but they score in numeric order of the species. So sometimes you might have to discard something that would otherwise give you point on a later turn for a different type of animal. So what's nice about it is you can play this with people who've never played card games before, you know, well, haven't played, you know, anything complicated. And then as they learn the game, you can add complexity to it, which was really important to us. Something we sort of took away from our time working at Grandpa Beck's Games. They always have a basic rules and advanced rules. And I really liked that. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty quick teach, I guess, then, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's literally it. And then, like you said, with space cats, if you don't get any, you're a monster. You lose 6 points. But you have to get at least 5. If you get 1, you don't get any points because you got a house cat. That's fine. But once you get to 5 points, then you start getting even more points. But before that, you start losing tons of points because they get into everything and ruin it. So
so if once you hit the limit, then they score positively.
They score positive, yeah. Sort of like a bell curve. So
interesting. What I thought was really clever when I looked at this, the page on the first go, was this idea of having your select set of hands, right, of your tractor beams, and that kind of polyomino grab. I'm sure it exists in another game. I hadn't seen it in another game yet, but this idea of, okay, I'm going to play this, which allows me to grab a square grid of cards. Next time I play a card, I'm going to grab a row. Maybe I'm going to grab a column. So it's kind of dynamic. It keeps changing, right? So it's not like like a point salad where you're grabbing, okay, I'm always grabbing two cards, or like a cat lady where I'm either taking a row or a column. It's dynamic. I can kind of change how I'm going to scoop up those animals.
I like to look at it as too, as sort of like a least bad decision, you know, sort of situation where it's like, you know, I could grab all these, but do I really want to use this card for that right now? And you have to make those decisions. And I really enjoy games like Arboretum is a good example of that, like of least bad decisions.
Yeah.
And so that's like a big part of what really inspires me in games. I like those tough choices. And then we've got our weather expansion that adds cards that change the way the wilderness works. So a gravity well might make it so that you can't take any cards that are adjacent to it till it comes off the board. Stuff like that that are going to dynamically change the collection area while you're playing it and really changes things up throughout the game. So
again, the visuals are awesome, and kudos to your, what's your artist name again, one more time?
Our illustrator is Cam Kendall. We found it, he was actually literally the first illustrator that I wanted, which I'm really happy about. We did some photography for a game called Dungeons, Dice, and Danger, from Ravensburger, and he was the illustrator for that. And I saw his animals that he illustrated for the dungeon. I was like, this is the person I want. I love these illustrations. These are great. So I immediately contacted. Thankfully, he was available. We hired him almost immediately. But now he's very cool doing stuff for Marvel and Lorcana. So he's much more busy than we originally hired him.
So he might not be on the second edition.
I'm hoping. I'm like, fingers crossed that we can keep him on board for any of the future Rocket Rancher universe games. So that would be helpful for us. So, but yeah, he was absolutely wonderful to work with, which makes my job just easier.
And then the cat, I saw something on your page about a specific cat that you've modeled. Is this your cat that was modeled after the hero?
Yeah, the OG space cat. That is our late cat, Charlie Ann. She was the original space cat. She would constantly yawn, and we would get these pictures of her just like big open mouth yawn. And so the big wide mouth sort of Totoro open mouth, yawn that space cat has, is very much based on her. And when we drew the original game, when I did my like shoddy illustrations that do not come close to Cam's, I used her as sort of like the space cat design. We decided to go with like a black cat, as the start of it, just for the lore of the game. But yeah, she's now one of the, promo space cats. So yeah, she's the OG.
And I'd say, although you have kind of the base tier for people to get in at $20 US, which is crazy low for a Kickstarter game, there's a lot of add-ons, right? So if somebody wants kind of like the all-in package, there's neoprene mats and things like that, which again, add a lot of color to the table. Do they fit in the box, or are those kind of outside the box?
Yeah, so the box is, and I know your listeners can't see, but the box is almost identical in size to Splendor Duel.
Okay.
I really like that size box. So unfortunately, a 12 by 24 playmat's not going to fit in that. but what I did try to do was I didn't want to do like one of the big square mats, just because not everybody has a table that can play on that size. And I like the ability to sort of have like a modular, like you can put the playmat here and then your players can sit wherever they want, because it plays up to six. I would love to be able to do a big box someday that holds the play mats, but that's like down the road.
Yeah. It makes a big difference though, playing with play mats, I find, especially these kind of card games when you're trying to scoop things off the table fast, right?
Oh yeah. We've got a permanent play mat on our game table. So,
and then how's the solo edition? Cause I think I read in here, there's a solo version too.
Yeah. So I originally was like, I want to do a solo mode. So I kind of played around this idea of having sort of like you're in a simulation testing to see whether or not you're capable of being a Rocket Rancher thematically. So you're going up against this, you know, artificial intelligence named Susan, who was sort of one of the characters in our Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like it's a test. And it's very much I'll be completely blunt and transparent. I am not putting out, like, you know, the world's greatest solo game. I'm not the Automa designer people. It's more of a simulated second player. And so it's going to be removing cards from the board, and your goal is to get the most points you possible and, you know, score higher than you did previously. And my son really loves playing games by himself. Yeah. Nekojima right now is his favorite to play by himself, and stacking the towers, that and Rhino Hero. He's really gotten into dexterity games recently, and I love it. But you know, he was very excited when I told him, yeah, we're gonna do a solo mode. He's like, so I can play this by myself? I'm like, yeah, isn't that cool? And he's like, that's awesome. So we always had like this running joke that anyone, like, whenever we would play like Mario Party and it would create the fake player, we would always say it was Susan. I don't know why, but just, oh, it's Susan, she's messing with us again. And so that was where we came up with the name for the artificial intelligence that you play against or whatever. It's one of those things where each round you're going to draw another card, and it's going to remove cards from the board or change the layout or mess with things. And you're going to have to deal with that until the end of the deck. And what's nice about it too, is if you're playing a two-player game, it perfectly works fine with two players. But if you want to bring her in as a third or fourth player, you absolutely can. And it will function just fine with her in it. And just kind of add some complexity and mess things up a little bit if you want a little variety in there.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. And then any plans like at the conventions this summer? Are you going to be showcasing this game?
I would really love. So I'm going to Gaming Hoopla in May, which is a local convention near me. It's a really nice little charity convention that we love going to in Mundelein, Illinois. We're going to be doing that in May. I might be going to Gen Con. It's sort of like on the fence. I'd love to be able to go. It's a maybe. But probably, I doubt we're going to have our game in by then. So I'm not planning on it. We'll see. My plan is to have 2025 maybe be our first convention season.
Yeah.
Right now, I just want to focus on making sure we get our games to our backers.
Oh, it's a lot, right? Like just layer upon layer of preparation, right? That's And then, so what's next for you guys? So you mentioned there's another game you're working on, like a Spider-Man.
Yeah. So Silken Venom is our next game. And that one we started designing about a year before we even started on Rocket Ranchers. I have like four pet spiders. So we've got these pet spiders, and we live near a lake. And so our house, like during the summer, gets like covered in orb weavers. And my family, we're super weird. We think they're sort of beautiful and we love watching them. And our son really enjoys watching their web and watching them make them. And we keep our entrance clear, because the last thing I like doing is walking through a spider web. But, you know, we let them stay on the side of the house, and he looks for funnel webs and orb weavers. And so we wanted to make a game that was sort of like, give a little empathy to the spiders and sort of be an anti-wingspan, so to speak. So we wanted to make this game, and basically it's loosely based on the Itsy Bitsy Spider. So you are a spider, you're building your web, you're trying to collect bugs, and then you want to get as many bugs as you can before the rain washes your web away. So it's got some press your luck, it's got some set collection based on what you collect, but we think people are really going to enjoy it and have a great time. And Leanne Pflug, our illustrator, she's an amazing illustrator, especially with bugs, and just does a fantastic job at them. So we're really excited to get that one out next. And that one we're going to launch, like, I'm aiming for like 2 to 4 weeks after the other one delivers to our backers. And then we'll launch that one. And then we've got our third one, which will go back to the Rocket Ranchers universe, which is going to be.
When does this one deliver? So when is Rocket Ranchers delivering?
So Rocket Ranchers, right now on the Kickstarter, it says November. Obviously, I'm hoping to be able to get it out before then, but I wanted to put that, you know, I wanted to put a reasonable date that I know I could fulfill out there first. So I'm not like running to try and catch up with it and hopefully be able to deliver early. But as soon as that one delivers, we're hoping this fall, about a month after, that's when we're going to launch Silken.
Oh, nice. And for all those people who are afraid of spiders, I'm sure they're still going to be able to play this game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that was one of the things we did when working with Leanne, is we tried to make the spiders cute. Like the bugs look like bugs, but the spiders are just a little cuter. They got like really cute little eyes, and we tried to make the game as pretty as possible so that even people who might have phobias, it's much more approachable to them, because I have a phobia of bees. So I totally understand people are scared of spiders, but once you've got a tarantula in your hand, that's like this big, when you see the ones on the side of your house.
Yeah.
And we've got pet jumping spiders too. And those ones are so much personality. You just sort of fall in love with them after that.
It surprises me how many people are like not just like a little nervous, but like freak out over like,
oh, yeah.
my kids and my wife are in that club of, if there's a spider, it's like they can't even be in the room, right? Like,
just yeah. And that's crazy. part of the reason we wanted to make the game, and we're hoping that it, you know, if you're a kid and you're playing with something as a game, maybe you're a little less fearful of it.
Make it a little more approachable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. Is there social channels where people can follow Binks and Dinks Games? You guys like
absolutely. Yeah, we have we are on Facebook and Instagram with Binks and Dinks Games. And then we have our Discord community, which is over 200 members. It's like we got 10 more people this morning, which is amazing. And nice. Basically what we're doing is, for like our Kickstarter updates, I'm going to try and compile things to like once a month on Kickstarter, but any constant updates I'm going to be posting on Discord. So there's like a balance. If you want to just get it once a month, you know, stay on the Kickstarter. If you want to get those regular updates, you can, you know, contact us directly on the Discord, see what's happening and when things are coming in. I've backed like 175 games. So I'm very much like, I'm running this thing the way I would want it to be run. Yeah. So that's sort of my approach to it.
Oh, it certainly shows. Well, I'm going to put a link in the show notes for those who want to find this campaign. Check it out. It looks hilarious and it looks like it's just a boatload of fun. And again, congrats on this campaign.
Thank you.
I want to wish you guys all the best this coming year. I can't wait to see how this is going to end for you. I'm sure you're going to be very, very happy with where you, I'm sure you're happy already, but.
Oh yeah.
Where
campaign's finally lands, over. I can wait. I can sleep in tomorrow, you know?
Exactly. All right, my friend, you take care.
You too.
Cheers. This has been an episode of the Board Game Binge Podcast, hosted by James Staley, produced by James Staley and Mike Bruner, with original music by Nick Smith. If you would like to watch these interviews live, simply subscribe to our YouTube channel, Board Game Binge, and you'll get access to live interviews, giveaways, and interesting board game content from across the industry. I can't wait for you to join us. See you next time.